accession number 19659, Reel 2.
Colonel Schroeder, Reel 2.
I just wanted to explain what it means, the special sections we dealt with the traitors and collaborators and spies. There was always three men, or three persons rather, because the women were involved as well. And you sort of came and said, in the name of Polish state for betraying this and that, you know, and they were completely surprised. And of course somebody took pistol and killed it. Kill him, her, whatever it was, you know, and marched away. We were not allowed to run. We never were allowed to run. We had to march off as if nothing happened. And that way you just sort of didn't draw any attention to yourself.
But you didn't do that, did
you? No. Because of my age, they pick up always more grown up. Usually professional NCOs.
Why do you think the resistance was so successful at that time in your area?
Because I think we kept together and obeyed the instructions how to behave, what to do in case this happens or that happens. We were very well informed and trained. So it came to such a thing that our district received the order from Lvov to execute this or that man or woman. We didn't know, we were not told, because that person was visiting with a nasty sort of aim to let us down. So of course team of three was sent. We never questioned the orders and simply carried out execution.
Were you trying to destroy communications or disrupt the Soviet regime?
Yes, that's a good thing you asked me. Then in about 1940 Eastern, I think that was April, we received orders to destroy by all means at our disposal all the trains loaded with the strategic material going to Germany, because Russians were supporting Germany. And that order, for our own knowledge, was mentioned, came from London. That's it. If that was from Poles or English, we don't know. Anyway, that was carried out as we were asked. All the trains were blown, burned, you know, disrailed, anything, not to allow petrol and other ammunition pass through border, then Russo-German border, for the use of Germans. So most probably some of the planes which were bombing London were flying on the Russian petrol. And that is not very well known and documented.
No. Did you take part in those attempts to destroy communication?
Yes. Communication as such, communication you mean as far as the transport is concerned?
Yes.
One in a trochon, so it's triangle, famous for shifting trains, you know, making new trains to go, how do you call it?
Marshalling yard.
That was one which I did. And the other one was train, goods train, going straight without any stopping to Germany, to Poland under German occupation. So of course we had our men on the railway service as well, all carrying stars and everything, very good communism with Poles. And they were saying, now chaps, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, train such and such will be passing, going to Germany, carrying petrol, you will see, as I say, all those tanks in a railway, tanks full of petrol, just going through. So of course, one team was just outside, checking if that train was going. Once it went, there was a telephone, you know, from the any place to a certain place there. He said, "Oh, how are you?" And so, "This is it. We are going to attend your birthday." That meant, and that at that time. So of course, the other team knew it would be passing that train, that point. So we had to blow up, and that was happening on a regular basis. Russians were furious. They couldn't find, you know, what was happening. They must have known, of course, it only stands to reason, that it was very well organized, rehearsed sort of action. So.
So the track was blown up with explosive?
That's right. Not only the track, but the whole train. Once you blow up a train carrying petrol and other material, which very easily burns, you simply just not only derailed, but you just jumped, told the guards to run away, jumped and put the hand grenades, you know, on the side of the tanks with petrol, and then you blew together. It was very, very, very dangerous, because you had only 3 seconds to escape or something.
Did you place the hand grenades yourself?
Yeah, that's right. I had to. Each man was attached and given one job: blow that and that tank. The next one, this or that. But then we would get organized better, because the injury suffers in underground supplied us with the burning, how do you call them, the dynamite. You know, you could put the match to it and escape safely, you know, because previously we had some casualties.
So did you just attack one petrol train?
All the time, once we got the order. I was personally known to me, I didn't attend all of it. It's about 9 trains like that. 9 trains that I know. Personally, I took part in 3. And
where would they be?
That was near the Kamenko-Chersky, north of my town Kovel. One was in Sarny. We had to scatter all this blowing, so the Russian would, because if you stick to one point, to one place, they would say, they must be coming from this town. So we had to leave that blessing all around, you know, if you can call blessing. And that's it. That was our job. They tried once to catch us, but it was to no avail, because Belarusians, they were very, very friendly, like Poles. They knew the sort of secret paths to the sort of wetland, you know, and the woods and so on, so on. So nobody could follow us and capture us being on the foot, because 2 men strategically placed were killing everybody, because they had to sort of create line and walk in line, one behind the other, and that was easy.
Why were the Belarusians so helpful?
Well, I don't know. We were always Belarusians, Lithuanians, and Poles in the 15th century. We're all under one sort of, like, in Britain, United Kingdom. We had the United Kingdom over there. You see, you've got here Scots, Welsh, Cornish, and God knows what. You see, and we still exactly stuck to it. So Belarusians were just, you know, very true to the tradition.
What other memories have you got of the resistance before you were captured?
Resistance, in the Lvov I was witness how the underground was capturing arms from Russians. Underground, Polish underground employed thieves, pocket thieves. And they came with the gillettes, the razor blades, and they simply cut, they created artificial sort of crowd, cut the revolver or pistol, you know, and of course disappeared. And that's the one pistol more, you know, for underground. Because pistols actually were better in a town and hand grenades than rifles. They were cumbersome, you know, you could notice. They were practical in the woods.
But did you see these pickpockets at work?
Yeah, that's why I'm laughing, you know, how they got organized, you know. They said, "Mister, move," you know, when they saw me laughing. And don't laugh, because I quickly sort of shut your smile. And that said, well, it was danger, wasn't it? How stupid of me. That's about the all as far as the my involvement. It seems easy when I talk about it, but when you are hungry, cold, left on your own, there's a thousand and one sort of thoughts are passing through your brain. Through that, you created your own sort of fright, break, and so on, so on. Which later on, I fathers and the Russian Orthodox fathers, they used to keep sort of sessions with us about the God, religion, killing, and we're told that if you must, if you fight for a country, you have to listen to orders and so on, so on. So of course we carried everything to our best knowledge.
How was the civilian population faring in under the Soviet regime?
Very poor, always looking for a food. I think that was done from the practical point of view, instead of having full stomachs and thinking about the freedom and fighting, they just sort of kept people, civilians, hungry, so they will be going, you know, caring more about the food than patriotism. Very tricky and crafty way sort of dealing with underground. That's one of the tricks.
What happened next to you?
Next, well, I came home. That was June. I think it was 6th of June when I was arrested. Captured, because they must have known I would be going home. And when I was at home, actually, and my family enjoying my presence, they just came in with the pistol drawn and arrested me. But they didn't take me to the Kovel, my town prison. They took me straight to Lutsk. So the underground would lose sort of track of me, what's happened to me. And of course I was a girl there all the time, I was pretending, you know, it was not me, it was some mistake or all the rest of it, you know. But anyway, they didn't listen to it. On the 20th of September, I was sentenced to death by firing squad. And I spent 6 months waiting for an execution to be carried out. All of a sudden, from 19th to 20th March, I was called up and I saw all these guards standing there with the bayonets fixed. And I thought, well, that's it. Goodbye, Mr. Skoda. So when I came in, they said, right, it's commuted for 25 years heavy labor and 5 years without any rights as a citizen. And you will be taken to the penitentiary sort of place, and you will spend all the rest of your life working out or dying of labor with a half smile. Well, that was really working us to death, let's put it that way. So I was taken from there.
Just if I can interrupt you, just going back to your arrest, how did they behave when you were arrested?
They were afraid of themselves. They didn't know if I had any chums outside. That's how I put the fight. I didn't have any arms on me. No hand. Two hand grenades my brother found, but they were not mine. And he wanted to give it to me. He was a boy then, about 11, 12. And my sister, younger one, took it under her pants. If I may use the expression, sat there and pretending, she's just a girl. You know, they didn't whisk her or anything. Just left. Immediately, they put my arms behind me, and with a wire, ordinary wire, tighten my hands behind my back. It was very painful. I was taken to the truck and went straight to the Lutsk. And then, of course, I went through all the washing and beating and the rest of it. And the three of us were taken and put against the, to face the court, so-called court. From my death cell, there's only a few hours living. There is that Shemashko now, who lives in Warsaw. He was a solicitor who signed as a witness, you know, that I was sent to. I gave you that document. So that's one. Another is Orwalski. He's of high class architect in Canada. Very sick now. There is another one, but we didn't know we were in the same underground. Here in London, Pshink, I've got his address and telephone, and myself. That's what I know of. Nobody else. But there were about 30 of us in one cell, big cell, waiting for to be executed. Mind you, there were some. Must admit, there was one Jew, and about seven of us Poles, and the rest were Ukrainians. And all of them, they were shot Ukrainians, because they were, you know, it was just the cooperation between Russians and Germans started to get sour.
How do you think then, knew how to that you should be arrested? How had they got the information that it was you?
I must know. I have my own suspicions, but it would be bad, you know, to blame somebody, because that somebody, there's two people, two men now, grandfather, they're still alive, so I could do a lot of harm.
And so how did they interrogate you?
Well, they were beating me through the. They put me on a sort of wooden bed, you know, like, or a table, put the wooden blanket sort of on the top of me, and they hit with all their might with the pieces of wood, you know, all along. They didn't hit my body, but they hit that blanket. And that blanket made one thing, if I use the expression, you didn't know where you went, you know, and did physiological needs, or spend a penny on the other thing, all painful at the same time. And they were just told you to go to the to your own cell, all smelly, hardly walking, you know, all downhearted, hearted, and just. Shortly, if I had something to kill myself, I would have done, for two reasons: suffering and not giving away all the information they probably waited for me to spill.
So why did they use a plank rather than hitting you directly?
More painful, definitely more painful. That was the technique they used. Everybody knew about it. It's very painful. You couldn't sleep. You always had the tummy ache, as if you wanted just to spend a penny or a shilling. And that it was degrading as well, because you had to sort of wobble yourself in the and your own excrements, you know what I mean.
And so they wanted information about the organization?
All the time. So I suspect they didn't have enough sort of, not enough news or reports. How we work, what's our strength, where are we located? Those questions were asked all the time, or around the questions. And of course, promises will let you know, will get you out of the prison, you'll be working for us, and so on and so on, which is not true. Then once they, NKVD, that means the Russian secret police, once they got you, you can only leave that organization or prison death. We knew about it, so it was useless. We were born about it, and we knew what to expect. So once you joined the underground, you had to join with open eyes and mum shut.
So were you obliged to tell them?
I wouldn't. There's something where... Once you start being hit and molested, you just swear, even worse, that you will not spill any beans whatsoever.
So it just made you more determined?
That's right, to keep everything.
What were conditions like in the prison?
We slept on the cement floor, without any blankets, of course. My sentence when it was commuted, I was only wearing my sort of light dress without coat. But when I went, when I was released from that death sentence cell, and I went to the general cell, three of my mates from my close chums were there in that cell, sent it to 10 years or 5 years, not for the underground, although they were in the underground, not for the underground, for trying to buy and sell goodies, food and so on and so on. And they called it, of course, Russian black market. They didn't like it. So I kept that secret. No, wouldn't say anything. But one of them, from the same class, from the same sort of grade in school, offered me, because he knew I was going to Siberia, probably. His great god, he was a bit taller, so I was thankful. And that great god went with me to the north of Russia, North Circle, and then when I was a soldier in officer school, it went with me across the border to Persia. And then a friend of mine had a chance and sold it for food, because we were still hungry.
What impression did you get of the type of people who were in the NKVD?
Very slick and dangerous. Very slick and dangerous.
Slick?
I mean, crafty. And they tried to catch you. They were phrasing their words carefully. Each one of them spoke very, very slowly and convincingly. This is what they thought. But once you grew up among the Russians and knew their language, because my grandmother married half Russian, half Pole, and of course my father was in the Russian hands, you know, he was captured as a soldier 1914, something like that. And of course, my mother, she grew up, and this, although they were Poles, they have spoken Russian, because they had sort of cousins, Russians, and it was, we kids, we enjoyed it, because we had two Christmases. One was Catholic, Christian like here, and another was a Russian Orthodox about fortnight later. So, no presents, you know. But that's joking apart. That's how I got, I still, I think, have got fluent ability of speaking fluent Russian.
So you were arrested just before the Germans attacked Russia?
Yes, that's right, yes. War broke out when I was in Kiev. They segregated all the prisoners, Poles on each side and the others on the other side. So when we came to Kharkov, we didn't know that then, they must have been keeping us in reserve to be killed, machine gun, whatever. Now, why? Because after the war, there were mass graves uncovered near Kharkov, and there's a lot of uniforms, uniforms of the schools, high schools, you know, with the buttons and so on and so on. They were just students like me, most probably. So everybody was sure it was the place where final extermination, even without taking us up the north, was carried out.
So was your interrogation in Lutsk or in Kiev?
Lutsk. In Kiev I was just ordinary prisoner waiting for the transportation north, up north. And of course the amnesty came.
Can you describe how you got the news that the Germans had attacked Russia?
Guards, spilling mail bins. And when we knew already the war is there, in the being. And when we were transported from Kharkov to Moscow, one starshy knight, means sergeant of the GPU NKVD, was saying, "You're a soldier," because I had the cap of the Polish soldier, that "you're a soldier," so I didn't want to go into there. I said, "Yes." I said, "You want to smoke?" I said, "Yes," although I didn't smoke. He put the tobacco in, rolled, and it was more paper than anything. So then I thought, being, you know, in a secret, uninterrupted. And look at the newspaper, first of all. And it was with big letters. Anglo, Polish, and Russo, or whatever the order you want to put them, came to agreement to form Polish army in Russia. I said, that's... And all of them, all sudden, guards, started to be friendly and treated us like future soldiers. "Oh, don't worry, we'll fight side by side." I said, yeah. So when I came to the Vorkutstroy 2nd Отделение, Vorkut 2nd Division,